This is Prescription Life with Dr. Matthew Harrison on Carolina Catholic Radio Charlotte, 1270 AM. Now here is your host for Prescription Life, Dr. Matthew Harrison.
Hello and welcome to the show. Excited to have you with us here today. And I wanted to welcome Dr. Faith Daggs to the studio. She's actually our first in-studio guest for my podcast, so that's kind of exciting. Welcome.
Good to be here.
So Dr. Daggs currently serves as an OBGYN hospitalist at St. Francis Hospital in Greenville, South Carolina, which is a Bon Secours facility, as well as Novant Forsyth Medical Center in Winston-Salem since 2021. Prior to that, she practiced full-scope OBGYN for 20 years, 18 years in South Central Pennsylvania at Holy Spirit Hospital and Holy Spirit OBGYN, and 2 years in Cary, North Carolina at Reply OBGYN and Fertility. While in Pennsylvania, she also volunteered with Morningstar Pregnancy Services, a pregnancy resource center, for 16 years, serving as their medical director. She's a graduate of Catholic University of America, Georgetown University School of Medicine, both in Washington, D.C., and she also completed her residency training in obstetrics and gynecology at Georgetown University Medical Center. She's married to her husband, Paul, for 28 years, and they are proud parents of 10 children, 9 sons and 1 daughter. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. And just as an addendum, I just started with my Catholic doctor, which is a primarily telehealth service. And so am now seeing patients in the comfort of my own office at home, which is nice.
Nice. So now is that wide range OBGYN problems, or is it mainly fertility care issues, or what?
So I've just had 2 patients. And so my goal is to really serve general gynecologic problems, whether it's irregular cycles, heavy bleeding, menopause and perimenopause issues. In addition to, I did have in my private practice life, I did have a focus of fertility disorders, miscarriage, but all kind of using natural family planning systems as a tool to then guide treatment and evaluation of patients.
Okay, and were you, are you kind of specifically with one natural family planning system, or do you kind of work with all of them?
Great. So I've been trained for 20 years ago with Creighton Model Fertility Care System and the medical model that goes along with that, NAPRO technology. Completed that, and that's kind of the underpinnings of how I really see and approach patients. I've also done the FEM Medical Management course back in 2018, and it's really a parallel system, and even having done the other system for 18 years, I learned even more, and I'm sure you feel like in medicine you're continually learning. But, you know, because patients are patients and I have a duty to care for them, you know, I love the Creighton model, and it allows me to, because I'm my familiarity, to be able to more easily evaluate and manage and treat patients. You know, my patients come in with a whole variety of methods that they're familiar with. So I've also worked with the couple-to-couple league charting system, mm-hmm. symptothermal method, mm-hmm. Marquette model. There's a whole various sundry of apps. I think there's now like over 1,000 just charting apps and lots of different apps out there. And sometimes patients are coming in with that, with actually no system at all. And so then, you know, I'm kind of harnessing one of my local resources. And so I was really blessed when I was in both my Pennsylvania practice and my North Carolina practice that we had in Pennsylvania Creighton model practitioners right there in our office. We had a couple different models when I was in North Carolina, but also had Creighton model practitioners in the community. So, and now through the beauty of telehealth, you know, I could refer a patient to a practitioner who's in Virginia, even though she's my patient in North Carolina. And just with society, people pick up and move all the time. So Sometimes they can find folks virtually. And so that's a great thing too.
So if somebody was not currently your patient but wanted to access you as their doctor, would they just go to the website and somehow request you? How would that work?
Exactly. So when they access the My Catholic Doctor website, there's a whole directory, so to speak, of physicians across specialties. Fertility care and reproductive care is kind of like a one core specialty that they offer in addition to urgent care and behavioral health services and geriatric care. They have really a whole wide breadth of Catholic physicians across the spectrum. But then the patient can say, you know, can kind of click on the patient part of the website and access a map and click on their state or pick from a list of states and be able to see a and then, you know, see a provider from there. Certainly, there are some – the states aren't totally coherent with the rules in terms of who can see patients across state lines. And there's so there's a little bit of variation across the United States. And so I am – so you have to be licensed in that state.
Right.
So currently I'm accepting patients here in North Carolina, but also patients who live in South Carolina.
Sure.
I can see as I'm licensed there as well. Mm-hmm. And I am in the process of reactivating my Pennsylvania license. So I might connect with some of those patients again that I had cared for some time ago, as that's some of the beauty of OBGYN, really, taking care of patients across their lifetimes. And you as a primary care physician, I'm sure you share that. And it's really a pleasure. And I can think of patients that I cared from, you know, from when they were 14, 15 years old through their first child. So that's really rewarding.
Yeah. And you've been with them through some of the most important times of their life, you know. Birth and death and big changes in life and fertility problems and all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, that is fun and very rewarding longitudinally.
Absolutely.
So what was it? Give me a little bit of your backstory of kind of what kind of pointed you towards pro-life medicine. Was there a key moment or a fork in the road where you said, no, I can't do this, or yes, I need to be more pro-life in my healthcare viewpoints?
Yeah. So, this in terms of just medicine and pro-life. In addition to having a large family, myself, my husband, and I come from a large family. I'm 10th in a family of 14, and my parents were very involved in the pro-life movement. You know, and that's something I recall throughout all of my years, and were very, you know, lived a life very kind of consistent with their faith, and that translated to us.
So you were raised Catholic?
Yep. Okay. Raised Catholic.
Okay.
And kind of Catholic schooling all the way through, from, you know, grade school all the way through graduate school at Georgetown. Mm-hmm. And so that being said, with respect to reproductive issues, had always been staunchly pro-life and abortion is wrong. But, you know, as I got into my young adult years, you know, didn't live a life or share beliefs that were consistent with the church's teaching on contraception. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though my parents came up throughout my college years and I was at Catholic University and went to the March for Life, you know, I would meet them for dinner, but I never went to the march with them. And I was at a point in my second year, or I guess maybe it was my first year in med school. And my sister was who I lived with. She was a young adult professional, and she was working, and I was in med school, and we lived together with some other young women. She kind of like spiritually adopted me, because she started doing some things, adult Catholic things that were available in Washington, D.C., so that's where we were. And she recognized I was kind of going off that path that she and I were both raised in, and she had gone off it too, but she was really starting to learn more about her faith and live it in a deeper way. Like we were always going to mass on Sunday and, you know, you know, doing those things. But and I was at a point where I had been in a serious relationship with my now husband. We had been dating since my senior year of college, and I was like med school and talking about getting Norplant of all things. And she must have been like, I don't know what's happened to this girl. And she really started praying for me, unbeknownst to me. And she gave me Familiaris Consortio to read, as well as Humanae Vitae. And that also coincided with my parents coming down again for the March. And I was a second year med student. And I was like, I'm going to go, which meant taking a day off from didactic teaching, which meant missing quite a bit of class.
Right.
So anyway, so we I went and I saw a sign that said pro-life after conception, pro-choice for before conception, meaning like contraception's okay. And I was like, you know what? That's a lie. And if I accepted the church's teaching, you know, that our Lord was present in the Eucharist, then I needed to accept it about marriage and what that meant. And I had a discussion with my boyfriend at that time. And I said, you know, I really feel like we're meant for marriage, but and we weren't engaged at that time. I love you, but we can't continue this part of our relationship. And he's like, that's fine. He's like, part of what I love about you is your faith. And that's so beautiful. We got engaged about 6 months later. And we're, in God's mercy, really able to enter in the sacrament of marriage in a really holy way.
Oh, that's beautiful. And so then you, so then when you graduated from med school and you did residency at Georgetown? And so were there problems with residency and
so
that whole pro-life, pro-life attitude?
In general, you know, because Georgetown was a Catholic hospital, a Catholic school, even though the university, even though like the majority of my colleagues contracepted and they provided uterine isolation, which was a euphemism for sterilization. At time of repeat C-section, if the physician sent a letter to the chairman explaining why it might be necessary at time of repeat C-section, that the scar might be defective, which I don't know how you can know that before opening the belly. You know, I really had frank discussions when I did all my residency interviews and was respected. And I was able to, you know, scrub other cases and I probably, it was really, you know, maybe a handful of occasions where I was just kind of
stuck
in that spot. But I was able to skirt that. And then also Georgetown has a research institute, Institute for Reproductive Health, that was doing ongoing research in natural family planning, lactational amenorrhea. And so I was able to spend some time there and work with them and then present that information to my colleagues. I did some research projects with them. And so at least some people were hearing of it because most people didn't even know that the Research Institute existed and it was part of our department. So I had support.
Good. And so you left there, went to Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And so when you did you join a large practice there?
So I joined a practice that was two physicians and a midwife. My partner had similarly had kind of a conversion, but it happened after she had been in practice for a couple years. And so we were one hospital, Catholic health system, and the sisters, the sponsoring institution, was really supportive of our practice. Sisters were supportive. The suits were not so supportive when partner started the group, but we really flourished. And we grew by the time I left there to a practice of seven physicians. And I think we had five or six midwives. And that practice continues today in a little bit different context, truly being, I believe, like a work of providence.
Now, was that an NFP-only practice?
Yeah, we were an NFP-only practice. And
We really
were
unusual.
Yeah, and we were really blessed to be able to transition from, you know, just offering NFP for family planning to a fully comprehensive practice in terms of all of the fertility services we offered, advanced surgery, advanced testing in fertility, you know, a whole core of teachers within our office, and to make it a really full scope practice in its breadth and depth of service that it provided.
Great. Okay, well, that's a little introduction to who you are, and we will come back in a few minutes and talk about some tough cases.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Carolina Catholic Parish News. St. Philip Neri in Fort Mill is having their 26th annual Italian Festival on Thursday, May 18th from 5 to 9 p.m., Friday, May 19th from 11:30 to 1:30 and 5 to 10 p.m., and Saturday, May 20th from 11 to 8 p.m. This is an event you won't want to miss. Homemade Italian food, live entertainment, wine tasting, live and silent auctions, over 50 artisans and vendors, children's parade, and expanded kids zone. Free admission and fun for the whole family. Visit SPNItalianFestival.com for information to purchase tickets and register for events. For the Carolina Catholic Media Network, I'm Pam Cullen. God bless y'all.
This is Tammy Harris. I am the founder and executive director of the Ursus Institute. We fight human trafficking both locally and abroad. I'm also a parishioner at St. Gabriel Catholic Church in Charlotte, as well as the Respect Life coordinator there. I urge you to check out my website, www.ursusinstitute.net, or to reach out to me personally at my email, tammy@ursusinstitute.net. Ursus is Latin for bear and is spelled U-R-S-U-S. And my first name, Tammy, is T-A-M-M-Y. We're involved in many operations right now, such as opening a transitional home for survivors in Western North Carolina. We're involved in a documentary about our work and about the realities of human trafficking, both locally and abroad. We're also giving input into anti-human trafficking legislation, involved in intel operations and rescue operations. There's many other things I'd like to share with you, and there's many ways that you can get involved. So I urge you, please text me at 704-519-7901, email me at tammy@ursusinstitute.net, or check out our website, www.ursusinstitute.net. And again, Ursus is spelled U-R-S-U-S. And please be assured that this human trafficking nonprofit works against trafficking in a way that is aligned with Catholic social teaching. Thanks for your time, and I look forward to hearing from you.
And welcome back to Prescription Life. I'm Dr. Matthew Harrison, and today we have with us Dr. Faith Daggs. She is a hospitalist OBGYN and also does some telehealth medicine. And so we've learned so far that, kind of her pathway to pro-life OBGYN medicine. Faith, so a lot of your work is in the hospital. So explain for our listeners what a laborist is, and what a laborist does in the hospital setting, and then maybe we'll talk about a few tough cases you had.
Sure. So an OBGYN hospitalist, there's actually even kind of different flavors of that. The laborist that you mentioned is a physician who primarily is working right on labor and delivery and managing papers and patients in labor, particularly for other physicians who have private practices and are seeing patients in the office and because of their census or the acuity of what they're doing, they can't be there on labor and delivery. And so a laborist is kind of taking care of their patients while they're in labor. Some hospitals have that model. The hospitals that I've worked at mainly have this OBGYN hospitalist that does actually more so not as much labor management for other doctors, but does triage. Many hospitals have, as part of their labor and delivery unit, have a second kind of triage unit that's called an obstetric emergency department. And so through that department, seeing pregnant women and varies gestational age at Forsyth, it's 14 weeks and above. At St. Francis Bonsecours, it's 20 weeks and above. And really, common things, are your membranes ruptured? Are you in preterm labor? Are you in labor at term? Do you have any issues with elevated blood pressure? Do you have just a UTI? Or maybe you have COVID? And so kind of triaging those issues. But also depending on the institution, there may be a a patient population that's what's called unattached. They've had, you know, they're out of town and they're in a car accident and they show up at the hospital, or they haven't had any consistent care and they're moved from one place to another. Those patients will show up in our OBED or even in our main ER and need to be hospitalized for whatever reason, if it's an early pregnancy issue or for just to have their baby. Those patients become the OB hospitalist service and don't become any, because they don't have a private practice doctor. Mm-hmm. At Forsyth, we receive patients because of, we have a very high level NICU. We receive the patients that the other community hospitals can't take care of, because if their baby is born there, that baby won't have the resources mm-hmm. it needs. So we receive patients in very high risk pregnancies, sometimes at very early gestational ages, where the NICU can just help those children.
And then are you also helping out the ER if someone comes in with a ruptured ovarian cyst
exactly.
or dysfunctional uterine bleeding or acute blood loss anemia or whatever?
Absolutely. So those women who, again, typically don't have their own OBGYN and they show up in the emergency room for an acute issue, they're having a miscarriage and bleeding, cyst, ectopic pregnancy, sometimes postmenopausal bleeding, and even consults in the regular hospital patient service. Someone who's, they have another medical problem, yeah. but a gynecologic issue creeps up in there, and they need to have that addressed in an acute manner.
Okay. So tell me what maybe is different. What's different about a pro-life OBGYN in the hospital setting, and maybe ones that are not Catholic or don't have a pro-life attitude? Give me an overall kind of gist as to what's the difference or what's the advantage of having one over the other. And then maybe tell me about a difficult ethical case that maybe you've had to deal with.
So something that's different in terms of being a pro-life doctor and then specifically being a Catholic doctor, the majority of the patients that I see and work with other physicians on are not my patients. And so I don't have that same longstanding relationship mm-hmm. with that they have with their physician. I don't know those patients. So even the patients who have no doctor, I'm meeting them in that moment and have to be able to establish some kind of connection, because sometimes there's really very acute things happening where I'm meeting a patient and literally 5 minutes later, I'm taking her to have an emergency procedure. And so that is a real challenge, and specifically around things in pregnancy, especially when they're around the time of what we call viability. Obviously, the baby's alive the whole time in the womb, but viability in terms of the ability of that child's can to be sustained outside of the womb. That I find that my colleagues who are not Catholic or who are even if they're Christian, they very much defer to the woman's wishes. So, for example, in taking care of a patient who comes into the emergency room, she's having some bleeding in pregnancy, she's early in pregnancy, and it's a challenging in terms of the clinical data we have to confirm whether this is a pregnancy growing in the uterus. Is this an early pregnancy that we just can't see yet? Is this potentially a pregnancy that's an ectopic pregnancy? I may have a colleague that would say, well, the patient expressed a desire that she's not planning on continuing this pregnancy, so it's maybe an ectopic, I'm not sure. Let's go ahead and give her some medication. And, you know, she's spotting, you know, it might not be a viable pregnancy anyway. And so it doesn't matter, because her intent is not to continue the pregnancy anyway, versus a physician who's Catholic and, you know, wants to honor and really, you know, live their faith in all aspects of their life, you know, personal and professional, is going to be more thoughtful and is going to be like, okay, what's going on with this patient? Okay, am I concerned that she's bleeding and I don't have a diagnosis? Do I need to hospitalize her? Do I need to talk to her about why, if she's expressing that she's not going to continue the pregnancy, you know, I'm going to get to what's going on with her. You like really try and walk alongside her and accompany her and see where we are while appropriately treating things medically. You know, I don't know where this pregnancy is. More needs to be done. She's stable. She's not stable. You know, she's reliable. She's not reliable. When are we? Let's get some repeat blood work. You know, really make sure that I'm reaching out to her, and then also doing what's medically appropriate, and kind of you know, going beyond. I would say.
Okay, and have you had some situations, maybe ectopic pregnancies, or maybe, you know, chorioamnionitis, or some situation where you're stuck between, okay, am I treating the mother? Am I treating the baby? Am I treating them both? Do I have to choose one over the other? That type of thing.
You know, those situations frequently come up. I can think of, you know, a particular situation where a patient who had some bleeding early in pregnancy, she had actually had like a triplet pregnancy and had had bleeding and lost a baby early, and then continued to have singleton pregnancy, kind of lost two babies that just kind of spontaneous loss, mm-hmm. but had a singleton pregnancy that seemed to be growing okay, was continuing to have some bleeding. Well, there was some question if maybe in addition to bleeding, she had ruptured membranes, very hard to discern. And she was in her second trimester, which is a time when it's in the early part of the second trimester that, you know, it's just kind of a watch and wait. And, you know, we admitted her and watched her and watched her blood count. She seemed to be stable because of the other baby sacs kind of still being present in the uterus. It was just challenging. And we enlisted the help of our high-risk OB specialists. And, you know, that person was just kind of very matter-of-fact, well, you know, If your water's broken, and even what's going on, this baby's probably not going to do well. The placenta's not good, XYZ. There was no, you know, clear there was no clear obvious infection, but you know he's like, oh, it doesn't matter. So, you know, consider just discontinuing the pregnancy. This patient, you know, she wanted to move forward with things. So, you know, we worked with her, we watched her because she was very stable. She went home. She ended up kind of more obviously breaking her water and came into the hospital when she was around like 21 weeks. And we supported her with, you know, antibiotics and steroids. And however, you know, there was a lot of concern that it just wasn't good things going for this baby because mm-hmm. of the lack of fluid and how that might affect development. But she, you know, was someone who was, didn't have inappropriate expectations, but just continued things. She ended up delivering early, 28 mm-hmm. weeks. And then she had like 2 or 3 days with her little one. And they're just because of didn't have good lung development, couldn't continue from there. However, it was, you know, challenging along the way because, you know, I would come in and be on service maybe twice a week mm-hmm. and I'd leave and, you know, maybe she had an episode of increased bleeding or increased leaking and my colleagues would be like, oh my gosh, like, you know, doesn't she know nothing's good is going to come of this mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. these kinds of things. But, you know, after, you know, as we move forward, the pregnancy with her was kind of interesting. I had another colleague who had the same perspective as I did. And, you know, the patient was very just grateful for having the opportunity
right.
and just having a voice of someone else who was like, I'm on your side. I don't think you're crazy. This is you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And had a like you're a mother already and supporting her through that. Challenge, even though, you know, she had her child with her in her arms for a very brief time.
Yeah. So many people and so many clinicians in our society, you know, would say, oh, well, the end result's the same. You know, you have a dead baby either way. But it's really not the same, you know, because you have saved that mother regrets. You have saved her wondering, well, could the baby have made it? You know, type of thing. Even if she has a loss, even if it's just a few days after birth. Then she knows that she did everything she could and she treated that baby with just as much dignity in the womb as if the baby was out of the womb in her hands. And so, you know, I think that is worth a lot to mothers, and to know that their healthcare providers are behind them with that is really, really means a lot. Okay, well, when we come back, we are going to delve into the world of contraception. So thank you very much for joining us today, and we will be right back.
Hi, my name is Kara Griffin from the Catholic Charities Human Trafficking Awareness Committee. On April 17th at 7 p.m., St. Aloysius Parish in Hickory, North Carolina will host a community forum entitled Stop Human Trafficking, How Our Community Can Take Action. This free event will spotlight the existence of human trafficking in our communities. The event will feature speakers from Charlotte FBI, Homeland Security Investigation, The Third Talk, Real Men Protect, and representatives from local safe houses, Hope for Justice, and On Eagle's Wings. This free event is open to the public. To learn more about the Catholic Church's response to human trafficking, go to www.ccdoc.org/human trafficking. That's ccdoc.org/human trafficking. Thank you.
Faith and charity are key elements of life, but are they at the center of your retirement planning and life insurance decisions? Knights of Columbus, a trusted organization with a proud history of more than 140 years of helping its members, can help Catholic families with insurance and retirement planning solutions. Most importantly, we do this in a way that is compatible with Catholic teaching and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops Investment Guidelines. Today, we have expanded our offerings to include retirement annuities, long-term care insurance, and disability income insurance. Beyond the benefits of financial protection, members may take satisfaction in knowing that Knights of Columbus contributes to causes that align with Catholic moral teaching. Let your faith inspire your financial decisions. Terms and conditions apply. Learn more by calling field agent Bob Gordon at 516-551-7838.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and we were just speaking with Dr. Faith Daggs, OBGYN hospitalist, about some of the tough cases that she's seen in her practice, and you were telling me on the break there that there have been some studies that have shown that that there's a difference in women who have carried difficult pregnancies to term and those who have chosen, you know, to abort or terminate. Give me a little bit more information about that.
So there's been an approach to difficult pregnancies, particularly those where that baby is going to have a limited time or may have a limited time after birth with the parents, called perinatal hospice. And when parents receive a difficult diagnosis during pregnancy, unfortunately, if there's any sense that the child is going to have a poor quality of life or have challenges throughout challenging things medically, that's the better thing, so to speak, to terminate the pregnancy. You know, that being said, you know, we don't always know. There are some conditions that we know that, you know, that the child's not going to be with us very long. And there's research showing, comparing those two groups, women and parents who decide to discontinue a pregnancy early because of a medical condition and their unborn child, compared to those women who continue those pregnancies and through birth, whether that's through vaginal birth or cesarean, but through their natural course, that even though they may suffer the death of that child after its birth, that those women tend to have a much more normal grieving process and less incidence of abnormal grieving and depression and regret over how they continued the pregnancy. Actually, there's quite a body of literature, especially around that. And a lot of those resources can be found through organization that I'm part of called the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs. Mm-hmm. And they have a really informative website, and you can find more info on that.
Yeah, and I've certainly seen that in my own practice, women who carried to term and still had a challenging delivery. And they use services like Be Not Afraid, who I've had on the podcast before. Great, great service, perinatal hospice service. Tell me, you know, a lot of our listeners, some are Catholic, some are not, and many, even if they're Catholic, have strong views about contraception and what the church says about contraception. Tell me your viewpoint and kind of, you know, what are your thoughts about contraception, the different, you know, methods, you know, I guess ethically. And then how do you approach that in your practice?
So as a Catholic, contraception really at its heart really violates marriage as a sacrament. And because it separates kind of the two purposes of marriage, especially the purposes of the union of the man and woman, the conjugal act. It separates the unitive and the procreative. And so you've put something in between that the spouses where, you know, I'm going to share my whole life with you, but not this part, not right now, this part. And sometimes not this part permanently. And then you've also separated yourselves as a couple from the Creator, saying, you know, so thank you so much for this body you've given me, I'm choosing not to use part of this right now. Like, we would not say to the Creator, like, well, I'm just going to stop my heart for a little bit, or I'm just going to stop my digestive function for a little bit. That, you know, it's where really taking, you know, that openness to the creative action of God and really a grace for couples to be participants in that creative action. And so it's something that, you know, can really affect relationships and families as well. But, you know, at its core, it's kind of just a violation of who we are, you know, made in the image of God and particularly image of the Trinity, where we can be both love-giving and life-giving. And so contraception, you know, separates that love-giving from the life-giving.
Yeah, and, you know, and of course with sterilization, which is essentially the ultimate contraception, you know, you're really taking something that works perfectly well and you're breaking it, which is counterintuitive to our Hippocratic Oath and to us as medical providers. So that really, that does not jive with what we think of in medicine, where we're here to find a problem, diagnose a problem, and then consider an ethical treatment for that problem to help the patient. And so you'd said that you had... you'd been trained in Creighton. Mm-hmm. So is that at the Pope Paul VI Institute in Nebraska?
Yes. Yep.
And are you a medical consultant?
So I'm a medical consultant. Okay. And so I did kind of a training kind of over a two-year period of time where I did a block of a week to 10 days and did didactic learning. And then I incorporated into my practice. And then I also then went on to become certified, which is through the professional body associated with the Creighton model called the American Academy of Fertility Care Professionals, just submitted cases and took a test. And through colleagues who practice in a similar way, we kind of hold ourselves to a standard. So we really try and, you know, have a high ethical standard, but a high scientific and medical one as well. And so I really didn't learn a lot when I was in residency about ways to treat gynecologic disorders that didn't involve using oral contraceptives as a medicine. And it's really amazing. It seems to be one of the only specialties that where one medicine can be used to treat a whole host of problems. And so when I really came to be convicted of the idea of that, you know, of that pro-life medicine was better when I was in medical school, I was able to reach out and meet physicians who were, you know, practicing in this way and what tools they used. I had the pleasure of meeting John Burchowski, who had a pro-life practice in Northern Virginia. And he was a real mentor to me and to learn about how, you know, I could incorporate the use of natural family planning methods into women's healthcare. And Dr. Tom Hilgers, who's in at the Pope Paul VI Institute in Omaha, Nebraska, really is as part of really developing a model of NFP called Creighton Model. Because he was a women's health professional in OBGYN, he started looking at these charts and his patients who were using it for family planning, but then coming to him as an OBGYN physician, and there were patterns that, you know, he's like, oh, well, maybe this is going on. And he's like, this is like a just a wonderful data tool. I can see what's happening every day of the cycle. And I can maybe use this as like, why is this woman having miscarriages? Why is this woman having painful periods? And the parameters of the cycle, the bleeding, the fertile phase, the time in between the different phases and the different points in the cycle could then be used as data points to target assessment, to maybe target surgery in a way that's respectful of the body. So we're not doing a women's surgery at a time where maybe she could be pregnant, but we can't test yet. And so there's fortunately even other medical models that have come up, but that to contribute to this body of science where we can have a woman track what's happening in her cycle and get to root causes rather just than just giving her a contraceptive to put a Band-Aid to mask that mass symptoms and really doesn't do anything to get at the root of the problem. And in some cases, And I think it's my colleagues just aren't trained at all,
you know,
that, you know, they're just giving this because they know it's going to put a standardized type of bleeding into their cycle. But it might not be helping, you know, why they're having pain or obscuring an underlying problem, you know, and then, you know, they get to a point in life where maybe they're ready for to build a family and they go off the pill and those symptoms arise again, and they may be at a much later course of an illness, like endometriosis, or they may have like an undiagnosed brain tumor, which I found in a patient a couple of years ago, because when she was an adolescent, she was just put on the pill because she had really barely started to menstruate, and she had, I mean, she had a rare but significant brain tumor that was masked for 10 years.
Yeah.
Wow. And I feel like it's bad medicine, actually.
Right.
And I'm so surprised that the feminist movement isn't completely up in arms, that women just take this substandard medication, medicine, you know, and approach to care where they're not even given the benefit of having their symptoms addressed in a cogent way, and not even offered options, you know, which is of itself.
Right. And of course, a lot of naturopathic doctors and patients, even if they have no religious convictions about it, love the more natural aspects of it, where you're using medications and cycles and rhythms to detect the problem, and then making adjustments even in diet, in sleep patterns, and all this type of thing to work with women's cycles in a natural way without dealing with all the chemicals that we're throwing into our bodies and then putting into the water system.
Absolutely, absolutely. And even just we know that there's even impacts of the things that are like in our food products. Mm-hmm. And like there's so many people who are about like clean living and those things that they come to myself or my colleagues that practice in this way from ways that are maybe totally outside of their faith. But it really you're really being really true to the dignity of that person mm-hmm. when you're offering them this treatment and a way that they also can be very involved in their care as well.
And in the last 2 minutes of this segment, can you just kind of give me an idea of what's the difference between natural family planning attitude and contraceptive attitude?
I guess the natural family planning attitude, particularly, you know, when a couple needs to use it to decide when to have children, mm-hmm. when it's appropriate to space children or when to really avoid, is that it's cooperative, is that both the partners in the relationship take responsibility. There's charting, there's communication, there's that collaboration. Whereas with a contraceptive attitude, it's one person's responsibility. There's the potential for one person to be taken advantage of. And even the way that we look at that intimacy, that it's much more self-centered in terms of, you know, your own enjoyment and pleasure from it because you're totally taking the responsibility of parenthood out of it, mm-hmm. but also you're taking out of it that consideration of the other person and that potential to really have that true gift of self. And so it's just very one-sided mm-hmm. for, and because of that, it brings in it the potential for partners to actually really to use each other, mm-hmm. Which is not relationship based or family based or community based.
It's almost like you're saying that people that are having sexual intercourse should have communication in a relationship. Weird. You're blowing my mind here.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the future of pro-life medicine. And thanks for joining us today.
On January 31st, 2019, Carolina Catholic Media signed on Charlotte's first Catholic radio station, AM 1270 WCGC. By the grace of God, we celebrate the past 4 years and look forward to continuing our apostolic vision and mission to serve the Carolina Catholic community. We are evangelistic partners with our clergy, active parishioners, the fallen away, and the homebound. We are accessible to all Christians, agnostics, and atheists. With distribution of a wide array of content across 7 media platforms, there truly is something for everyone. During these past 4 years, Carolina Catholic has expanded to 7 media platforms that include radio, internet stream, mobile app, website, YouTube, social media, and e-newsletter. Nearly all local programs are available by podcast and video on demand. In the year ahead, we're committed to promote more local parish, school, and ministry events, more live broadcasts, and more valuable content that showcases our dynamic local Carolina Catholic community. Of all the Catholic radio stations in the U.S., Carolina Catholic is arguably a leader in locally produced programs. To continue our work, Carolina Catholic Media needs $15,000 in monthly funding to continue operations across our 7 media platforms. We are 100% dependent on your generosity. If you love what we're doing, please join us with a monthly tithe or annual gift. We have partnership plans available for parishes, schools, and ministries. If you own a business, you can be a program sponsor on one or all of our platforms. You can do a live broadcast of a special event with promotion before and rebroadcast after. On behalf of everyone at Carolina Catholic Media, we thank you for your past support and look forward to you joining us with the resources the apostolate needs to continue to evangelize the truth of Jesus Christ and our Catholic faith across the Carolinas. May God bless you and your family abundantly.
We are back at Prescription Life with Dr. Faith Daggs today. I'm Dr. Matthew Harrison, and Dr. Daggs is going to be heading down to Greenville, South Carolina after our show tonight to pull some shifts, doing some shift work down there. It's busy. You know, you got a big family. You're a busy, busy person running around doing a million things. How do you keep it all together?
My spouse, you know, I jokingly say that I'm the 11th child. I think it's, you just do what you can and try and really kind of living in that present moment. Yeah. And, you know, when our kids were little, it's like, is there a path across this room I can walk in, you know, without laundry or toys in it? And then now we have some young adults out, but I feel like parenting the teens and the young adults is harder when they're than the little ones and the toddlers.
I agree completely. But yeah, my wife is a saint, and and anybody who's doing pro-life work kind of out on the front lines, there's always tends to be a spouse that is really carrying the heavy load without anybody seeing it, you know. And so I appreciate her. I mean, even these like scrubs, every day she has she makes bundles for me, and the bundles are literally scrubs rolled up with everything I need. So I grab them and take a shower and get dressed for work. I mean, she does everything. Absolutely, it's amazing. Yeah.
My husband packed me literally a cooler. So I have meals at the hospital, and you know, he takes really wonderful care of me. And we've really always looked at this as a vocation for our family. And when I started in practice in Pennsylvania, my husband, you know, at that point, we already had three kids. We had been through like three or four different childcare situations when I was in training. By my chief year, he was taking care of everybody at home. And he literally had a box that said Paul's Law Career on it. And he had it for a decade. And he like ran our household, and I would have patients be like, oh, that's so great. Your husband's letting you have a career. I'm like, no, it's really uncomfortable for me to be the breadwinner. This is like our family vocation. And, he has just as much to do with what I do as I do. Like it just wouldn't have been possible, for us to be open to our family and to have this. So
both of our spouses are highly educated. I mean, they could have complete gangbuster careers on their own. You know, sky's the limit. My wife's a nurse practitioner. But yeah, so they've really died to self with a lot of this and greatly appreciate it. So let's talk a little bit about kind of where you see the future of pro-life medicine. I mean, I kind of look back in the 70s and feel like, you know, the Christian community, the Catholic community, the medical community let our nation down, let the world down, allowed abortion to become legal, allowed the government to take care of, you know, all this without us, you know, stepping up and showing, well, this is what good healthcare is. This is what ethical healthcare is. Where do you see the future? I mean, we just got essentially now the abortion decision is back to the states. Thank God, at least it's not, you know, Roe v. Wade is gone. Never knew whether or not I'd ever see the end of that. But where do you see the future of pro-life medicine? And I know you said, you know, you're already involved in telehealth medicine, which is kind of now since COVID become a gangbusters type of a way of delivering healthcare. What do you see kind of on the horizon?
I think that we're starting to see how we can collaborate and build up all these kind of small pods of things. So, you know, those of us who have kind of been in practice, those community organizations, like pregnancy resource centers, several of those are starting to become a little bit more medicalized and even become physicians working with them and doing a little bit more in delivering care versus just doing ultrasounds and pregnancy tests. And now they're, when I was in Pennsylvania, we actually collaborated with our Department of Health. We found an ally, and through the Department of Health of Pennsylvania, we were also able to offer treatment for sexually transmitted infections, certain infections, in addition to testing men and women, offer counseling. Some of those, there's some organizations who are working towards collaborating those types of models, like the Guiding Star Foundation. Mm-hmm. And there's another one out of California I can't think of right now, but also kind of utilizing the telehealth platform. I mean, mm-hmm. everybody's got a cell phone, people across the spectrum, and that allows access to, pro-life healthcare, and offering things like, abortion pill reversal. I would love to see greater involvement and collaboration between our larger Catholic healthcare organizations and real pastoral directives from our bishops. And it seems to just vary in place to place. Mm-hmm. When I was in my last year of training at Georgetown, I was privileged to be with a wonderful bioethicist, Dr. Edmund Pellegrino. Mm-hmm. And through his support, wrote a paper. And at that time, I think it was like almost 30% of healthcare in the United States. So back in 2000 was through Catholic institutions. Like, we have such a powerful both financial lobby, and even we have wonderful ethical and religious directives for Catholic healthcare institutions that our bishops have given us. Mm-hmm. But, in some cases, there's, a lot of kind of Peter and Paul not knowing what they're doing in one hand to the left, especially as we have collaborations with secular institutions, that we really need to just give the care because it's good medicine. Yep. And certainly we have the truth of our ethics and our theology, and we can kind of work in on people's hearts while mm-hmm. we're working on their minds without proselytizing. Mm-hmm. And so there are places like in Colorado, Bella Healthcare Center, which is a not-for-profit but works under the umbrella of their diocese. So they have that support in health. And actually, Dr. Prochalski's practice, Tepeyac in Arlington, mm-hmm. Virginia, yeah. had some significant help from their diocese to really provide a service that's serving the underserved, but is doing it in a way that's totally cogent with the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And, like our practice that was well supported by our sisters, we kept growing. We were like mm-hmm. bursting at the seams. We were profitable, that it can be done. Mm-hmm. And I think, I'm hoping that some of other, that witness is there and they're seeing that this makes sense. I see the Ascension healthcare system in different areas of the country starting mm-hmm. to support NAPRO technology practices and mm-hmm. providing it as a service in their hospitals. A lot more has to be done, but it can be there. It can be done. And I think in the academic world, we have to kind of get to folks when they're med and pre-med. Mm-hmm. And knowing that this is something that's available. And even if you're not a Catholic doc and you're not going to be NFP only, you got to know about this. Like, you need to respect women and respect couples and offer this as a service. And hopefully the truth of the gospel life is going to change hearts and minds. But it's also really good medicine.
Yeah. When we were in private practice, we hired a third physician that came on, and she had been trained. She was family practice, but did OB as well, and had been trained in just the normal allopathic medicine. But when she came into our practice, which was NFP only, she really learned the rewards of, this relationship that we had with our patients and natural family planning and families and that type of thing. So, yeah, she became a believer just from working in the practice. So that was really great. Yeah. And, I think there's a lot of hospitals and systems and practices that are so afraid of lawsuits, and they're very afraid. And so that's a big thing, is getting over that fear, being bold. And really, at some point, maybe putting it out on the line and just realizing, we could get fired, or we could get, sued or whatever. And of course, here locally, we've just been granted a charter for the Catholic Medical Association. So we're very excited about getting that arranged. And over the past couple of years, we've been growing the Charlotte area Catholic healthcare professionals group. And so that's been great. And I think what you were saying about the telehealth medicine, where we can start to see and work with people all over, I think for many years we've felt very isolated and we've felt very much on our own. And I think that, the future of pro-life medicine is going to be bringing all those folks together, networking, realizing, you know, our voice is a lot stronger than we thought it was. I'm not a kook because I think that, you know, you shouldn't kill babies. and I think that if we find that support with colleagues, our voice will be a lot louder. We'll have realize we have much more power and influence than we've been using in the past. And of course, down here at Belmont Abbey, just south of Charlotte, they're building a new hospital. And so I'm really excited about the possibilities there of that being more of a Catholic hospital, because they're very excited and interested in making that a Catholic hospital with Catholic ethics. So that's what we need. That's what we need is, I mean, worldwide, the Catholic Church is the biggest provider of charities and hospitals.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of power there.
Yeah. I mean, some would argue we invented the hospital in St. Basil back in the 3rd century. So.
Exactly. We brought all the sick people to one place.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And I really feel it's kind of a core of one of those things that we expect from the Catholic hospital. And I know when I was in training in Washington, D.C., one of our clinical sites was Providence Hospital. And there would be patients who would they had some issues because they were concerned that the death rate was a little bit higher there. But it was because patients knew that the sisters were going to take care of them and that they were going to die with dignity and that regardless of their faith, that they weren't going to be ignored. And even though maybe they didn't have all the techno, they were high touch and they were going to, you know, make sure that they were treated in a way commensurate, you know, with being a child of God.
Yeah. And along those same lines, in the last little bit of time that we have, you know, we've got some challenges coming now with, you know, gender transitioning people and people saying that they're women and having periods and that type of thing. And people are having surgeries and things are happening and we don't even know where this is all going. So that's something that's, you know, we gotta see how are we going to react to that as pro-life physicians? And what are your thoughts?
Yeah, certainly we have to accompany these individuals who, for one reason or another, feel uncomfortable under their skin. We need to really understand what's going on with them, especially where these are minors. We need to, you know, make sure that we're not just seeing normal pubertal transition and I'm just feeling awkward with who I am. And there's a really big concern that, unfortunately, in the United States, that there's a money-making drive behind some of this care. And because we're not listening to our colleagues in Europe who have already discontinued some of these really surgeries that really kind of desecrate the body or change the body in a significant way, and these hormones that, you know, there's no turning back from in some cases. And so,
and folks like Planned Parenthood are fast tracking this stuff. You're talking about literally a 30-minute visit with a patient and they're getting put on hormone therapy. Terrifying.
Very terrifying. Yeah. You can't even let your child get their ear pierced at age, you know, 16, but they're an emancipated minor if they want to take any kind of hormones. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. This is a great talk. We'll have to have you back in the future when we have some more stuff to talk about. Because
My way to Greenville.
Yeah, on your way to Greenville for more shift work. But thanks again, Dr. Faith Daggs, for joining us today. Thank you so much for all the pro-life work that you're doing and serving women and families in the hospital setting. And thank each of you for joining us today.
And now in the virtual setting, too.
That's right. And the telehealth medicine, go to, what is the website?
MyCatholicDoctor.com. And if you have questions, you can reach me at faith.daggs@mycatholicdoctor.com.
Great. Thanks again for coming. And thank you all for joining us here today at Prescription Life. Have a great pro-life day.
You've been listening to Prescription Life with Dr. Matthew Harrison on the Carolina Catholic Radio Network, 1270 AM Charlotte, and streaming at CarolinaCatholicMedia.org and on the Carolina Catholic Media app.